Welcome to the Championship Sportscast. I'm Kempson Cross. With me, as always, JT.
It's anxious zone.
And Brandon coming in via Skype. How's everybody's week been?
Joyous. Wonderful. Really busy. Research papers.
Oh, great.
Always fun. The Lakers beat the Celtics, though, so that was the highlight.
Yeah.
And it's all in House of Cards Season 3 premieres tomorrow, so it's going to be a great weekend. Time to relax.
How about you, Brandon?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
Talkative bunch, isn't it, aren't we?
Well, no, my week's been going good. So, JT, will you get us started with our first segment of the day?
So, as always, it's time for Play of the Week. What do you got for us for Play of the Week?
Brandon, you're up first.
All right. How about Zach Randolph hitting a three-quarter court shot off the backboard?
Bank shot?
Yep.
Play of the Week.
And it was contested.
Play of the Week.
Yeah, there was definitely a guy there.
Yeah.
Great. But anyway, what's your Play of the Week, Kempson?
Mine?
Play of the Week.
Mine is a reverse posterization by Carl Anthony Towns of the still undefeated Kentucky Wildcats basketball team. He's a stud. I mean, we talked about Okafor last week, but
you got to refer to him by his real name. Future top five draft pick, Carl Anthony
Towns.
That's
his full name?
You have to give him his title.
Future top.
I don't care. It's future top five draft pick, Carl Anthony Towns. If anybody noticed, that was a subtle jab at Richard Sherman when he did his interview on First Take with Skip Bayless, when he famously told Skip Bayless that you must call me by my title. Stanford graduate.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Pro bowler, uh-huh. Richard Sherman.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
Subtle jabs at people.
Yeah, of course. You're doing something subtly? Wow. That's new.
Not so subtle.
What else? All right, what else do you have that's new for us?
Play of the Week. Well, my Play of the Week this week is a little bit of a really cool Cavaliers play, which I'm sure we're going to be seeing more and more and more of because they are just looking better, better, and better. And especially looks like now with Derrick Rose being out, we'll talk about that later. They have a free shot now basically at probably the Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's going to be great. But Amon Shumpert threw up a little beauty of an alley-oop to J.R. Smith, who caught it and threw it down behind his head for one of the craziest alley-oop dunks you will ever see in your life. But for all Play of the Week stuff, we'll put the URLs in the podcast description. You can go ahead and check them out. They're cool. They're pretty cool. They're pretty cool. But yeah, that was this week's Play of the Week. But now let's backtrack a minute to Plays of the Week from 35 years ago. We forgot to talk about this last week.
Right.
Over the weekend on the 22nd, it was actually the 35th anniversary of my personal favorite moment in all of sports, basically ever. It was the 35th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice when the U.S. Olympic hockey team defeated the Soviets in 1980 in the Olympics. And it was just an incredible game because nobody thought the Americans could win. Nobody thought the Americans were going to get past the Soviets, and it happened.
All-time great moment, all-time great movie, at least sports movie.
It is. It's my favorite sports movie, but it's my favorite sports moment ever because it's just the perfect culmination of an era of history. Like you'll rarely see something like that come out where it's it's a defining moment of not only a sports era, but just an era of history because it's the U.S. versus the Soviets. It's them godless commies versus, obviously I'm being a little facetious,
right.
Versus, the capitalist U.S. And it's just this incredible culmination of just what ended the Cold War, ultimately ended the Cold War with the U.S. on top and the Soviets just kind of crumbling under the pressure. But it's just this moment that I felt was absolutely incredible, and it will always go down as my single favorite sports moment.
I've got something game, that I think you guys might be mad at me. I have Rudy
awesome.
On DVD.
Yeah,
so
no,
I
and it's
it.
Well, I mean, it's
I heard
it's,
Brendan
it's, that is a good movie.
Trash talking that,
but
movie
as far as the Miracle on Ice
was
is concerned. As far as the Miracle on Ice is concerned, that is one example of why I love events like the Olympics. It's an example of how the Olympics as an event transcends sports, and that's a large part of the reason why I enjoy the Olympics so much, and also the World Cup and stuff too. That's one great example. The Miracle on Ice, maybe Underdog. The leading example of at least in American history of exactly an underdog story, and just the scrappy blue collar hardworking Americans go beat the
they were all big, amateurs bad too,
red,
right?
Red Soviets.
It was shortly after. I think it might have been the very next Olympics. They went to the dream team idea, right. But it's just a cool moment. And I could talk for 20 minutes about how, you know, about what happened that ultimately caused the Soviets to lose, and how that's further symbolic of the Cold War and what really caused the. I mean, I could give a college lecture on it, and it would be because if you look at it, you know, the coach made the decision to pull the goalie,
right?
Which is if you use it as kind of a allegory for the government screwing up, because that's what ultimately led to the collapse of the Soviet Union, is the government was trying to do too much, and it just doesn't work. Part of it anyway, they were trying to do too much, and that ultimately cost them. I could do a, you know, college class on it, but it's super, super interesting, and it's wonderful.
And another great thing that came out of it, was that 30 for 30 of Miracles and Men from the Soviet side, which told the Soviet side, which another great 30 for 30. I haven't seen it yet. I know that you've seen it, but I
watched it.
Yeah.
One of the things, it was good, right? One of the other, I guess, the big takeaways from it that I really liked was that it's when you look at what happened, it's incredible because you get to, you know, you get in the minds of the players that were super pissed off. They pulled their one of the all-time greatest hockey goalies. They pull him, and it's nope, you gave up two goals, you're done. Or you gave up a goal, you're done.
Right.
And then then you have one of their guys, his name started, it was like Fezlov, I think, was the player's name, that ultimately actually, after that Olympics, came to the U.S., and one and brought there were several other Russian hockey players shortly after that came with that actually ended up on the same team. I think they played for the Red Wings at the time, and they won the Stanley Cup, and they all took it back to Russia. And it's just a really cool overall story. I love it. And, you know, I feel awful for what happened to the Soviet players. You kind of have to in on high. But for us as Americans, that's incredible, and we will never.
Another thing about the Russians is that all they did was play hockey, right?
It's a moment of national pride.
Yep.
Well, that's what they. I mean, that's we have plenty of American professional athletes that do it. I mean, these kids that played on our team were college kids that played a lot of hockey. That's what they do. It's not what they did for a living yet. Mm-mm. That was the ultimate goal, and several of them, I do believe, actually did.
Yep.
And it was just, but the Soviets were generally, it's like the thing you hear now about the Chinese athletes they have in the Olympics, that's what they do. From a young age, they train in one sport and that's it. They don't really they kind of get an education, but they just train. Yeah. That's all they do. And that's what the Russians effectively did. That's all you did was play hockey. You were, you know, the Soviet hockey player. It was your job.
Well, from an all-time great sports moment to... an all-time, I would say probably getting up there at least as far as an all-time great running back. Adrian Peterson his suspension was overturned by a judge.
It was appealed. Yeah, as it turns out, I think it was today anyway. It was today that he's basically eligible for
the NFL is appealing the appeal, though.
They basically have to at this point, from my understanding. I mean, they have every right to do that, and we'll see what happens. It's super – I don't know. There's a lot that's going into it, but I think the more interesting thing is what's going to happen with him, because apparently his agent got into a gigantic heated match with one of the guys in the Vikings organization basically saying AP's never going to play for him again.
Right.
Which
– And so that would tend to – one would tend to infer that he's
and I'm guessing that agent probably
be traded
bridges on
or
his way out
hit the free agent market.
Confrontation.
Well, it's well, I mean, who knows? It's just It's a bad situation because I think the Vikings still see him as their franchise player. And I, because I mean, I'm sorry that there's really nobody else that that team has that you can point to and say, I think Teddy Bridgewater could be. He played less games than the rest of the, you know, the guys that were considered.
He was still the best rookie quarterback.
Yeah, he was basically the best rookie quarterback of last year's class.
I think Blake Bortles obviously with him.
So,
That was sarcasm, obviously.
The thing is, he's on a really crappy team, and season. I think they see something in him, and I think a lot of people do see something in him. So, doesn't mean he's not going to be a franchise player. It takes time to develop. Like, you can't just show up and be amazing.
Yeah. And the Jaguars, if you put a line in front of Bortles and let that just all that youth on that offense develop, I mean, their defense is pretty good. So if that offense comes along pretty relatively quickly, I mean, that's the AFC South. They can make some noise.
Oh yeah, and of course, I mean, get Justin Blackmon back to him, and it'd be scary, but that's not going to happen for a while, more than likely. But this Adrian Peterson thing is, he wants to go play for the Cowboys, which could be interesting because I think it's a bad idea for the Cowboys because their fan base is in love with DeMarco Murray. Absolutely in love with DeMarco Murray after what happened. And I mean, I understand it. I think that it's absolutely justified to be in love with DeMarco Murray, but I think Adrian Peterson's one of those guys that you can almost guarantee is going to be great. Like DeMarco Murray, we could, for all we know, could have been, you know, a two-season kind of flash in the pan thing, and AP's been great his whole career. And the thing is that, I mean, the argument could be made that would rather have AP over DeMarco Murray. Like, I'm saying it's I see it both sides is what I'm getting at. Like,
well,
I
yeah. There's been a lot of the analysis of the DeMarco Murray decision with the Cowboys is part of it is the fact that someone who was used as much as he was, I mean, with success, definitely, but the amount of tread that he got on his tires, especially last year, his first full year of health, I think, in the league, like the drop off is dramatic. Like the CJ2Ks of the world, Chris Johnson with the Tennessee Titans comes to mind. Like that's the kind of cliff that we could be staring at for DeMarco Murray. And so
he's been to that cliff and didn't fall off.
Yeah, well, that's true too. And he's set a new precedent.
And he came out after being injured and hit the edge of that cliff and didn't fall
exactly.
off.
Exactly. NFL free agency itself begins officially, I believe, March 7th is really when it starts to kick off. And as far as the NFL scouting combine is the future of the NFL. The current players, obviously, there's cuts being made and everything, but the scouting combine concluded earlier this week. And as the veteran combine comes up in March and the pro days come up in March, was there anyone that stood out to you guys? I mean, Chris Conley.
Yes, he did.
Kind of blew up the combine, I would say.
How about Trey Waynes?
Is one that comes to mind.
Yeah, and wide receiver out of Georgia is Chris Conley. Michigan State. No one expected him to run that fast.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and I think by at least some accounts, he's the top corner in the draft. But a couple of guys who are from, in some cases, very, very small schools.
I'm not aware of Hobart.
Like Ali
Where Marquette, is that?
Offensive lineman out of Hobart.
Where would that be?
Hobart.
I've heard of him before. I don't know where it is.
No, it's a play. It's in Geneva, New York. It's a Division III school.
Yeah, I've heard of
him. And he turned in a top flight offensive, a top flight performance for offensive lineman at the combine. And but the guy that exploded, quite literally, at least in the broad jump and vertical, and well, at least the broad jump, Byron Jones, corner out of UConn, shattered records in the long jump. We still are trying to find, you know, the number three quarterback as far as after Mariota Winston, and then there's the gap, and then who's the third one?
Southwestern or something like that. I was
Southeastern.
Yeah,
yeah,
Southeastern. That is apparently
actually former Oregon quarterback Brian Bennett.
I saw some bad things from him at the Senior Bowl.
There's There were some shots.
He didn't seem all that accurate.
And I know what you're talking about. I've seen that too. And obviously, like we said going in, it's the point of the combine is to see kind of who you missed. And it's the first opportunity to interview prospects and kind of get a feel for what kind of person they are. There's a lot more emphasis on background, it seems like, with just, I guess it's the age we live in and kind of how things have changed over time. But apparently it's become background has become maybe not more important, but more of an emphasis.
Well, it's definitely become, there's no doubt it's become more important. Like even just saying there's more of an emphasis kind of leads. It's right. Like they're putting more.
It's the same thing. Tomato, tomato. Yeah.
They're making it more important. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know. And I think part of the thing is, and they're starting to, I think this is something that started, I've heard from some rumors that it's starting to float around coming from the NBA side of things over to the NFL, is they want to look at guys that have high IQs as opposed to just who's the most singularly athletic.
Right.
Because if you have a guy, especially in like some of your positions, other than obviously quarterback, it's always been a huge deal to look. What's his football IQ? Has always been, like, especially in a quarterback, and we'll get to that in a minute because I want to talk about this Jameis Winston video that came out. That's
how old Chris is.
Absolutely impressive. Is that you want to look at guys that have IQs to be really smart and know what they're doing. Because the thing is if you watch some guys blow up plays and like they cut the plays off, it's not because they're more athletic than everybody else.
Great anticipation.
Because they have great anticipation and they did some other things where you still need to be athletic, but
Junior Seau was insanely great at anticipation.
Yeah, yeah, but and that's just it. Like if you watch like Cam Chancellor when he jumped over that guy and almost blocked a kick.
That's yeah.
Like that's sheer athleticism, but that like he gets over it. It's like that anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
Like the clown.
Very potent combination in that example.
Yeah, Mr. Vincent Jackson.
Oh yeah, just
no, Vincent
just
Smith.
Him. Michigan.
That's what his
back.
Name
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I mean it.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's just like you see that, and it's like. The higher your IQ is, linemen, I think, are generally, like, your offensive lineman, your defensive lineman, being smart is, like, super, super important, but you need to really be able to move guys around.
Yeah.
But, like, especially, like, the linebacker positions and, like, some of your other spots, it's, like, super important now to have guys with higher IQs so that way you can make those
plays. At certain positions especially, yes.
Yeah, and that's starting to become more of an emphasis as
mm-hmm,
well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Speaking of IQ, I guess the biggest shock for me was this Jameis Winston whiteboard video that came out over, I can't remember. So it was Steve Mariucci's the guy's name,
yep.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Gets him down, sits him down, draws up this crazy play that's like jet two coverage. This guy's running a slant. You got a touchdown here. You got the check down man's here. Like listen on all the like
classic
check downs, mooch. Like everything, like this incredibly complicated play. Like
mm-hmm.
I watching the video, I could follow it and kind of getting mm-hmm. what he was getting at. Like I understood it. Yeah. Well, I understand it. Mm-hmm. Like I know enough about football to
yeah.
get what he's getting
yeah.
at. But then what happens is, he flips the whiteboard around and starts interviewing Jameis Winston. He starts talking to him, having the conversation. And in the middle of the conversation, just goes, draw me the play.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis stands up, reps it right out to him
yep.
in like the most impressive way. And he's like, got a touchdown here, 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 here. Like reps all this stuff straight back to him. And I was like, wow.
Yep.
Like Jameis, like I've always, like I might talk a lot of trash on Jameis Winston to an extent. Like I'm very skeptical about some of the things I see from him on the field, in particular the interception thing, but we've covered that ad nauseum.
You yes. have talked to it about
exact
it a lot. This is kind of your forte is Jameis Winston and interceptions.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's just like it's just something that grinds my gears because people just like want to blow it off, but then you can't let stuff like that go. As far as I'm concerned, like that's just where I'm at is that you can't let something like that go. And I'd always known that he was a pretty decent decision maker and understand stuff, but that takes it to a whole new level, and that's really cool to get to see that. Like, I don't know. I still don't know if I'd take him over Mary. It depends on what team I am, too. Depends on what.
And, like we've touched on a little bit before, it depends on what kind of changes or adjustments you're willing to make to bring, obviously, Mariota and the Mariota versus Winston into the next level, because along with Winston's high football IQ that you've been touching upon, he is the more pro-style ready quarterback prospect. And
I have one thing that I wanted to say is that I watched the quarterback drills. Both of those guys have great footwork. I watched Jameis, though, and he has better footwork than Mariota. I would not say that Mariota has bad footwork, though. He has good footwork.
No. And Mariota's going to be I believe Mariota's going to be good wherever he goes, as long as they don't completely jack up the process of trying to bring him along.
I think Winston's obviously has his off-the-field problems, and he says he's going to turn it around. And, like, I'm like, yeah, you're in college. It's different when you go from being college. Like, because, like, my thing is that there's a lot of
college athletes. And stealing soda and breaking people's windows.
Because that was just stupid. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah, I mean, but okay.
And Tallahassee's one of the biggest, like, party cities in the United States.
It's the lifestyle. Like, it's almost all. Yeah, it's but it goes yeah, along
but
with
you didn't
everybody.
See Nick O'Leary
so
getting
if other,
into all
it's
this
like
stuff.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. So
yeah,
I
but
just,
you didn't see Nick O'Leary doing all this stuff.
And those are all excuses.
Well, no.
Ultimately,
but the thing is, though, is that it's not an excuse. It's an argument to be made because if.
But it's an excuse. It's an argument of excuses.
No, it's not. It's not at all. It's what I'm making the argument is not that it's an excuse for what he did. It's that other people do it. It just hasn't been
yeah.
as public.
And Jameis is not stupid either. Like, he's a hard study and
that's
he's a 4.0
student.
Yeah,
not
definitely.
Making an excuse for him.
Definitely. Nope.
Clearly. Yeah, he's really smart. Like, I mean, I don't take anything away from him. I'm just pointing out that he unlike Manziel, like, there's a difference between his attitude and what, because he's come out and said, "I'm changing."
Definitely.
What, which Manziel has since done, though. So I guess
but
it's just that there's things about both of them, and I could see. I mean, I have no problem taking Mariota and the other, and I have no problem taking Winston first. Like, it doesn't bother me what happens. The only other thing is, too, this interesting argument I was listening to, too, is that that basically Mariota might not have been in an NFL-ready system in college, but it doesn't mean he couldn't fit into one in the pros.
No, exactly.
Which is a thing that
But I'm talking right off the bat. Well, no, to no, maximize no. his talents, you're probably going to – I mean to ease the transition as much as possible, you're at least going to have
to – Well, we saw what happened
or,
when Mike Shanahan
concepts
adopted
from Oregon's
a
offense
concept
into
from
yours.
Baylor's offense yes, to suit right. Robert Griffin III. Yeah, well, it also got him injured
he
a few times.
He had his best year that he's had in the NFL.
Well,
that's true.
RG3's problem is he's – just,
RG3
oh,
got
field,
himself injured
field,
a few
that
times.
Field is the
well,
worst
and
field.
Allegedly,
in,
the field got him injured once.
Well, and not allegedly, that's literally.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson
yeah,
got
they,
his knee
that,
torn up on
that
field.
That's a
he got his knee torn up on that field. I think that field has
NFL
more torn
should,
ACLs than
I think,
any field in America.
Oh, it's just awful.
No, yeah, it's I'm not sure exactly what the problem is, but they definitely need a better field. So as far as new things go in the NFL, something that has been at least has long been talked about, NFL to LA is getting more and more real by the day. Inglewood, California City Council approves
Inglewood always up to no
about
good.
A $2 billion plan for a NFL stadium. And interesting tidbit before we get into a little bit of discussion on that is the Rams owner
also
is a partner
other developments
in that land
that happened
ownership
in this past week,
as part of
the
plan
Raiders
that was
and
approved
Chargers
for the
are also looking to move to Carson City in California, or is Carson or Carson City, where they also actually already have a stadium there that I believe they only play soccer in, which is the Home Depot Center. The Raiders' lease
well,
is
I mean,
done.
Their leases expire pretty quick here. So, yeah, exactly. And geographically, the Raiders and the Chargers, and also legally as far as their lease with the stadium and everything, they're probably, well, they are closer as far as moving to LA.
I'm sure it would.
But I don't know if three teams in LA is really a possibility. I'm not sure. But, and also the Chargers mm-hmm. or the Raiders would have to move, most likely move to the other conference. Like, yeah. One would stay in the AFC, one would move to the NFC.
So that would be really interesting. Yeah, I had heard that Roger Goodell has also bounced that idea off.
As far as how the divisions would realign there.
But, yeah, I've heard that rumor.
Well, I think the way I see it is that I think of all the teams that should move, it shouldn't be the Raiders. They're the middle team in this, though. I think if it's not the Rams, I think the Raiders should move.
But the Chargers for sure.
I think the Chargers should stay. I don't think they should.
Oh yeah, Chargers definitely.
Just chill.
Oh.
Well, they need a new stadium, but I think let's look at it this way. The Chargers are kind of that team that's like they have an extremely dedicated fan base. Like that's pretty grounded in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Like that is not in the sense that it's like
but you can go
anywhere in California and see a San Diego Chargers hat.
Well, they're everywhere. They're up here. There are a lot of Chargers fans out there, and the Chargers are that team that's just they have a pretty widespread fan base that is pretty large and pretty dedicated to that team. And the thing is, though, is I don't know how well that fan base would stick around.
Well, they started in L.A.
Yeah, they started in L.A. and moved. But the thing is, though, is if you look at the Raiders are going to be Raiders fans no matter what happens. Because the Raiders are like the most diehard fan base I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. For anything short of maybe the Manchester City Man United type like those really like rabid like soccer fans that you see that like.
Well,
that's how I see Raiders fans. They're going to go wherever that team
goes. I don't know about the Raiders being necessarily they're going to stay there a long time wherever they go. If the Raiders go to San Antonio, I already heard my dad say he's never going to be rooting for the Raiders again. He'll never watch another football game.
Well, I don't think
the Raiders aren't going to San Antonio.
I don't think they should ever try and put a team in San Antonio. I think it's a horrible idea because San Antonio is not a good sports market unless you're called the Spurs, in which case that fan base, I'm really curious to see where that fan base is going to be as soon as Pop, Parker, Ginobili, Duncan are, because they've been good.
The flip side of that San Antonio coin is, or not the San Antonio coin, but as far as the Raiders, we just talked about how powerful the Raiders brand is and how loyal the fan base is.
Yeah.
So,
but the thing is, though, is that fan base is going to be loyal wherever they go. Is my theory. Whereas I don't know if that's the case with the Chargers. So you would
no, like, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is the Raiders to San Antonio?
If you're going
to
move a team anywhere in Texas that's not named Dallas or Raiders Houston, you should move to Austin, the other thing, Texas, though, the third largest city in America, I believe.
Well, that's valid.
I mean, that is a valid point, but it's. I mean, the thing.
They already got an arena football team, though.
Yeah. Anyway, so the point here is, though, is that Chargers, I think, should stay where they are. Mm-hmm. Like, just because I don't know what would happen with the fan base. It happened
well,
with the
Supersonics. Well, they vacated the Thunder because their owner purposely tried to lose so that they could move the team to Oklahoma City.
Well, yeah,
that was more like Browns Ravens type of.
Yeah, thing. but it's still you've seen it happen before. Is kind of my
point. Right, but there would be the Los Angeles Chargers.
It's not that big of a move,
before.
Though.
Yeah, which they've been before, but most fans are just like, "Well, we want like most Chargers fans." And I know quite a few of them are like, "Hang on, can I finish, please?" Okay, because basically all my friends that are Chargers fans and everybody I've talked to and heard from. Is like we would stop being Chargers fans. Like we don't care. We don't want to be a fan of an LA sports team. And it's like if you start to continue to look at it, what's going to happen with that fan base? The Raiders, wherever they go, they're going to kind of chill. And if you move the Raiders to San Antonio, by the way, that's too far away to move a franchise because the season ticket holders and stuff and the people that generally have season tickets aren't going to be there because it's going to be hard. Mm. It's too far away. Mm. It is way too far away. Mm. And the thing is that San Diego doesn't have another good sports team.
Is there any way that
the Padres have sucked and have sucked for a long time? The A's are actually kind of good.
Yeah.
So taking a team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you move the Raiders, they still have a good team because the A's are pretty good right now. And then if you look at the Rams, who I think they should be the ones to move, because most Rams fans are still pissed off that the Cardinals left because that's their team. As I know, a lot of Rams fans are like, that's their team. We wanted they see the Cardinals more as their team than the Rams actually are, except for some people in our generation. But it's like that fan base isn't as tied down as the other ones are.
I'm by no means an expert on the situation, but I would say if there are going to be two teams in LA, I would say Raiders, Rams, and San Diego should stay put. So I guess I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have a problem with the Raiders. I think I would like to see the Raiders stay too, because I think it just would be. I mean, I don't have a problem with them moving, but I would like to see them stay too. And I think if any team moves, it should be the Rams. But then again, I don't really think.
I think it absolutely should happen.
I really want an NFL team.
So I'm going to differ with you.
Well, it's happening.
I know it's happening, but. Okay. Let me rephrase this.
Yeah.
Not that I don't want a team there, but I don't want to move another team to put a team in LA. Let's expand.
Let's say Austin more than San Antonio.
Make a new team and stick one in San Antonio or Austin and stick the other one in LA.
London more than San Antonio or Austin.
Or how about not London, because that would be horrible.
I don't want London to happen either, but if we're going to expand,
why London?
Do two teams, because an odd number of teams.
Yeah, we have to. Yeah, you have to. You can't do.
Because we have three games over there is the only. No, I know. I'm not saying we should move a team to London. I'm saying that London is more likely than Toronto, and LA is actually happening because we have stuff in the works.
Yeah, no, LA is happening. Like, that's all there is to it. But the thing is, with going to London, too, is that I don't. A, travel costs, but B, the reason why, and I have a feeling that. It is actually, like, when those games in London, like, why you get such huge crowds there, it's a novelty.
Yeah.
Because it's three times a year. Okay, it's not, you know, 16-game season.
Another reason why the Jaguars should develop so that we can send them a quality product, because apparently
how much of a fan base does the Jacksonville Jaguars have in London?
I just think it's a horrible idea to...
I don't know. The Jaguars owner... just likes going to London. And so Shad Khan likes going to London, and he's sending the Jaguars
over there, so they might as well step up their game and
develop their players, which I believe they can. I think they can be a decent team. Yeah, and in the near...
Yeah.
Yeah, and okay. In the near future, like, that's the owner's doing, is what I'm saying, is the owner wants that to happen.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, what is happening is the NFL to LA, but not right now. What is happening... what got announced over the weekend is that May 2nd at the MGM Grand Las Vegas, Floyd Mayweather
finally
Jr. versus Manny Pacquiao.
Should have happened a long time ago.
Reaction?
Thank freaking God. Well, okay. Let's put it this way in the perspective. It's about 4 or 5 years too late, and I think as we've kind of, from my take of it, a lot of this was caused by Mayweather's camp just wanting to be pains in the butts, I think, is what it has boiled down to. But yeah, it's going to be awesome. It'll be probably a good fight. I think Mayweather will probably win because he's still – Pacquiao really kind of dropped off in a hurry. Like, he was so dominant, and then he lost a couple fights, and it's been kind of – a little not the same. It hasn't been the same for quite a while, where with Floyd, it's still kind of been Floyd. Not quite as good, but has been at a higher level of being...
Well, Pacquiao got beat by Timothy Desert Storm Bradley. Really, he got knocked out by him, didn't he?
But...
And...
Yeah, I think so.
Juan like, Manuel
okay,
Marquez.
One of the those... One of his most recent losses, I don't remember who he fought, was BS, though. I think it might have been the first Marquez fight, was BS. Like, whoever judged that fight needs their eyes checked.
This could be one of the last fights for either one of them,
because it looks like they will
both be retiring soon. Well, Pacquiao is actually younger than Mayweather. He looks older, though.
Yeah, but the thing is Pacquiao does a lot more than just box, which is not true of Mayweather, which I think is part of Pacquiao's problem.
Yeah.
Pacquiao, which has caused a lot of controversy, plays basketball in the Philippines because they had a guy in the Philippines just got cut from the basketball. Like, he's a politician. Like, he does a bunch of other stuff that is not like what Mayweather is, a boxer, and that's all he does. And spend egregious amounts of money.
make even more egregious amounts of money.
Yeah, he makes a lot of money, and so does Pacquiao. And it's just like, but Mayweather, like, that's what Mayweather does. Pacquiao, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's several years too late, and I think it's time. So.
Oh yeah, it's past time. A little bit of background on the fight as it's being billed: Floyd Money Mayweather and Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao. That's the nicknames. Floyd is from Las Vegas, Nevada. He's undefeated with 26 knockouts in his career. 5'8", 147 tipping the scale there. Orthodox style, which I believe means right-handed, correct?
Generally speaking,
yeah. Well, that's the reason I assume that is because Pacquiao is a southpaw, and he's 5'6.5", it says. They're both 147, so they're both even
there. That's what the fight's going to be anyway, is at 147.
Right.
Is in that area.
And his record is, career record, 55... Or 57 wins, 5 losses, and 2 draws.
It's either draws or no contest.
Right.
It could be
38 knockouts though, and he's from General Santos, Philippines, like you said. Yeah. Right.
And he's got 38 knockouts to his name, which is, that's the one thing that I've always seen is more impressive. And that's the other thing is what's really caused Pacquiao to drop off. Pacquiao used to be one hell of a power puncher. Like, he had hands of stone, and that's not really true anymore because he knocked guys out a lot. Mayweather, not quite so much. I mean, Mayweather knocks guys out, but it's not like Pacquiao was in his prime.
Yep.
So,
did you hear about the prices for the tickets?
It'll be fun, I think.
Starting at $1,000 and ringside will be $250,000.
Starting at
$1,000. Do you have that kind of money?
That's the rumor, yeah.
Okay, the deal has not yet been finalized on what would be a joint pay-per-view Showtime HBO telecast of the fight. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's the latest on that.
It'll be fun, I think. So be a good time.
Mm-hmm. And the other time we addressed this on the podcast, which was at least a month ago now, this needs to happen more often. I mean, especially when it's the two best fighters.
Currently in their own respective weight classes, but we do have to also take into consideration the Klitschko brothers.
They're not. Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather.
Never heard of them.
Are the number one and number two pound-for-pound fighters, respectively, in the world. Like, I understand that the Klitschko brothers are really good.
Yeah, that's fine. They're good in their own right. That's fine.
But Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather are two of the greatest ever. Like, they're pound for pound number one and number two, and they're two of the best boxers to ever live. One of them arguably is the best. Well, Mayweather's undefeated.
Right. Okay. Are you going to say Pacquiao? Is it going to be another Magic Johnson deal?
Well, no, the Magic Johnson thing. You can support that with a hell of a lot of evidence that is a lot different than what most people want to bring up. The thing is that Mayweather is arguably the best boxer to ever live. Like, he's transcendent above even like Muhammad Ali in terms of abilities and stuff. Like, he's incredible. Mm. So it's kind of a big deal. So.
All right. So UFC Fight Night 61, Bigfoot versus Mir was the main event. So we'll start there and go through just the main card.
It's on Fight Pass, wasn't it?
One on Sunday night.
So who watched it?
I have it recorded, I guess. I don't know. I'll go back and watch it.
No, it was on Fox Sports 1. I watched it. So most of it anyway. I missed a fight or two because of football. But can you pull the
list? Not a surprise. Mm-hmm. Not a surprise.
Frank Mir defeated Antonio Bigfoot Silva by a knockout in the first round. I mean, if it was the other way around, none of us would be shocked because they're heavyweights, and that's just how this goes. That both of them were on losing streaks, and I guess Bigfoot still is. Frank Mir snapped a 4-fight losing streak, so I mean, it happens. It's not the end of the world.
I mean, you talked about him retiring last week. You still think he should?
Both of these guys are. I mean, there's big question. I think if I remember right from what I saw, he hit Antonio with a freaking jab.
Well, yeah, but it's still a heavyweight jabbing you.
You get knocked down from a jab, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
I know, but it's
still, a heavyweight jabbing a heavyweight.
It's a jab. Okay? It's a jab. Jabs aren't designed to do damage, ever, really. I mean, there's guys that throw heavy jabs, but they shouldn't be enough, really, generally, to knock you out. Because you can't, it's just supposed to be a quick punch to throw off time.
Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying.
I believe this fight was a loser leaves town deal, wasn't it? It was over. So, and then, no, there was, if Frank Mir lost, there was rumors it was loser leaves town.
It's been a while since he's won, and now because he also can't take TRT.
So, but.
Because of his illnesses.
Yeah, it happens. It's not the end of the world. We'll see what happens. Nobody knows.
Well, it was over quickly.
Yeah,
it was less than two minutes.
Yeah, it was over quickly. So that's a heavyweight fight for you. But then I guess what I thought should have probably been the main event on this card anyway was Michael Johnson and Edson Barbosa.
Yeah, he had beaten Edson Barbosa King was on a tear too.
And was like on an up and coming streak for quite a while. Yeah, and that was I don't even think he really beat him. He beat him on the scorecards, but it wasn't really a fight. He just kind of circled around him the whole time. This fight, Michael Johnson won by unanimous decision, and there is a lot of people that are super
I'm not surprised
pissed
it was in Brazil.
It. Super pissed off about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Michael Johnson's American.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about the outcry at all.
You're not surprised about the outcry, you mean?
Well, the thing is, usually in Brazil, American fighters and people that are not Brazilian lose those close decisions. Like they're the ones getting robbed because it happened earlier in the night. Like there's people that are pissed off. I think it might have been the Ponzinibbio fight that people are really upset about. It was there was a fight that people are really pissed off about that went the wrong way, that they're screaming Brazilian bias towards Brazil. Might have been. I don't remember in any way, but the point is, anyway, that it's not shocking that there was a bad decision.
Would
it's
you
shocking
say
that
which
that
was
way
like
it
went. Batman George?
Because from the sounds of it, Edson Barbosa, and from what I caught of it, because I missed a little bit of it because I was at football, Barbosa was winning that fight from what I saw. So that was apparently a bad decision, and from what I saw of it, I agree with it. Sam Alvey defeated Cesar Ferreira by a knockout with punches in the first round. That was a pretty gnarly one. Adriano Martins defeats Rustam Khabilov. That fight was boring, 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 and it was ended in the third round by obviously a split decision. I had it going Martins' way because Khabilov didn't really do much. It was quite the boring fight to watch.
At least the names are entertaining.
I mean, yeah.
I'm still stuck on the names. I'm going to go with the names from now on and make Western references when applicable.
But
that's my new approach.
Frankie Sainz defeats Alcantara.
Might have to.
No, probably not. Because usually it's other stuff's going on. But Alcantara defeats Yuri Alcantara by unanimous decision. Santiago Ponzinibbio defeats Sean Strickland by unanimous decision. It might be the one that people are super pissed off about. It actually might be. But there was a bunch of people that were claiming that there was some BS involving the decision. I'm trying to look at where he's from. Yeah, no, Ponzinibbio is Brazilian. So, okay, thank you for getting me confused.
I had a feeling that
is the one they're super pissed off about. Yeah, the Santiago Ponzinibbio. I was like, defeats Sean Strickland. That one was controversial. Apparently, everybody thought Strickland was winning that fight and won every round, but instead lost every round.
What do you think?
From what I saw of it, I had it going Strickland's way, but I didn't catch all of it because I was, I think, raiding on Destiny at that point. So, because I thought there was some mix-up on what time the card started. So, yeah, it was great. Or I was getting ready for – no, I was getting ready for football at that point. Mm-hmm. That's what it was, getting ready for football. All right. So, but yeah, but that was pretty much – I mean, there was no fights of consequence other than Edson Barbosa losing.
Okay, because so, that was my next question.
But I mean, so it doesn't really matter. Barbosa was up and coming and, I mean, got robbed. So he has a right to be pissed off, but he's got to get back on the horse and keep going. Let's move on to basketball and talk about some injuries. From one injury-plagued sport to another, I suppose. Chris Bosh is out indefinitely for the rest of the year at least. They found a blood clot in his lung. It's a good thing they caught it.
Yeah.
I like Bosh. Yeah. I make fun of him for looking like a velociraptor. But
well, you're not the only one, but I'm like very glad because that potentially is life-threatening slash ending. Yes. So I'm very glad that they caught that.
Yeah. But that kind of really hurts that team's chances even with Dragic. So the Heat are in trouble. But I'm more worried about Bosh's health than anything. But now we can talk about the injury-plagued monstrosity that is Derrick Rose. Tore his meniscus in his right knee, and basically he's got two options. Either they can repair it, and he's out for the rest of the year, probably in the part of next season as well, or they can remove it. And if they remove it, he's only out 6 to 8 weeks. Problem is, though, is that that's the surgery Dwayne Wade had when he was in college. Mm. And, ooh boy, Dwayne Wade says he regrets it every minute of his life because it hurts. Mm. When you have a meniscus removed, it hurts. Mm. All the time.
Yeah.
So that's not good at all. And then you've got, he could have it repaired and miss a lot of time. And I think he should have it repaired and just come back next season and call it good because it'll hurt him and he'll never be the same if he has it removed. Like, it'll hurt his explosiveness. He won't be the same. Not that he's been the same lately, but he's not going to ever be the same if he has it removed.
Well, I'll tell you why that hurts. It's because it's part of the joint.
Yeah, no, yeah, because your knee.
Like, it's directly a part of that, so yeah, it just
they rub on rubs each other.
At each other, yeah.
It wouldn't be good. And then, so.
And Derrick Rose, do you think that one of the problems that he had earlier this season was that he was still not fully confident with his
knee? He was getting there towards the end of the year, and that's kind of what I think, is at the end of the year, he looked like old school Derrick Rose. The last, like, 4 or 5 games, he was looking good. So. I don't know. It's unfortunate. So.
All right. Well, from one player with I guess, bad health to a player whose health is improving with every day and has actually made progress to the point where he's back at practice with his team after his horrific injury.
That was disgusting.
In the FIBA practice in the Thomas and Mack Center in Vegas. Paul George is back with the Pacers practicing with his team.
I think
he's Adrian Peterson. Just kidding.
I think he's pushing himself to get back, and I was reading an article that there's doctors that are advising him not to come back till next year.
I would rather he came back later at full strength as opposed to the risk that RG3 has taken, Derrick Rose has taken,
The thing is, though, is that Paul George's injury is a lot different. But the thing is, though, is that you have to worry about him re-injuring it, but the problem is, too, at the same time, is what do you want to do about it? Because the Pacers, I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs. They might. I don't think they're in position to. I think they're...
If they get Paul George back, there's a chance.
Well, where are they?
23-34. They're currently 11th ranked.
They're 2 games back from being an 8. Is it enough, though? Because what made that team good last year? Stevenson's Gonzo.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's Indiana. This is, kind of a lost season at this point. I don't know if lost season is the right terminology for it, but it's just what are you gaining, really, by pushing your superstar that hard to come back for a bad team?
Yeah,
what's the point?
I agree. And I hope Paul George gets the hell out of Indiana in a year or two anyway. He needs to go somewhere where where he's going to be a big name because he's that good.
You want him to go to L.A.
No, I don't. I there's... I don't want him in LA because I don't want to pay him because there's other players I would rather have. So
if he's a native of the LA area, though.
Isn't he wants to. He wants to play. There's rumors out there that he wants to play for the Lakers, but there are other players that I would take over him that are from LA that want to come back, namely Russell Westbrook.
You take Westbrook over Paul George?
Abso-freaking-lutely.
Right now or
absolutely.
At all?
Absolutely. Over most of his career, I would take Westbrook over.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, I would take Westbrook,
because the problem
too.
Is Westbrook, okay. If you look at Westbrook without KD around, he's an MVP. Mm-hmm. Absolutely is an MVP. This year, I think he might win the MVP if he keeps up this pace.
I've heard him talked about as a dark horse.
Right now, after the last couple games where he's put up triple doubles in under 25 minutes or something like that, or whatever it was, that like he's one of two players besides Magic Johnson to ever do it. And he's done it almost twice in the last like week.
Still riding momentum from the All-Star game too.
And he's on Russell Westbrook. The problem is that he's in a system that's too built around Kevin Durant for his.
Is that too strong of a word?
Well, it's completely built around Kevin Durant. It has been.
No,
years.
I know. But, yeah.
It's that Kevin Durant is the focal point of that team, and those two need to get away from each other because Russell Westbrook is a franchise player. He's virtually unguardable. He's faster. He's more athletic than probably any other point guard in the league, if not any other player in the league. He's definitely more athletic than any point guard, though. There's almost no doubt about it. Maybe Derrick Rose when he was healthy. But Russell Westbrook's a monstrosity. And I would, if I was to take any young point guard and build a team around him, I'm taking Westbrook. Absolutely. And he's also got that killer instinct mentality that I look for in a player.
Right.
So, but right. I would take Westbrook.
Well, all right. You don't want to, so you don't want to pay what would be a King's ransom for Paul George to come to LA, but the Sacramento Kings have a new head coach in George Karl, formerly of the Nuggets, which gold is associated with royalty sometimes, I guess, but now he's in royal purple in Sacramento. What do you think?
Yeah, have fun not winning another championship for quite a while, George Karl.
That's your entire take on it?
He's not... Okay, this season for the Kings is like, okay...
No, yeah, not this season. Are you gonna just this season, though.
But what are you going to do? You've got DeMarcus Cousins. What is your next step?
And Rudy Gay.
And Rudy Gay, but Rudy Gay is not what I would classify as an all-star caliber player.
Yeah.
You need, to be good in the NBA, you need two, at least. Mm-hmm. At least. Mm-hmm. And don't. Yep. And yep. There's only one team that I would... Well, there's a bunch of teams that have a lot, except the Hawks, because Korver's not that good. I'm sorry, Korver just shoots a lot of threes.
You can't take a shot anywhere else. If you run him off the three-point line, he's not going to do a lot.
Yeah, no, Korver's not that great. I mean, yeah, okay, but it's like the only team, like it's like the Cavaliers. They're good because they have three all-star caliber players and the best player in the league. But you have like the Pelicans with Anthony Davis that can't do anything because you need somebody else to take the pressure off that other guy because that way you can't double him perpetually. You can't do other things that are going to hurt that one play. You can't – with two people, it takes away your options. So.
Well,
the problem do you think that Nick Stauskas will end up developing into one of those type of players?
I don't know. I haven't seen him play is the problem because I don't get to watch a lot of NBA. And the only – I'm a guy that's like I can look at your stats all the time, but the NBA is a sport where I can say LeBron James is the best player in the NBA. Why? Because I can see it. I can see that Russell Westbrook is probably the best point guard in the league, besides maybe Chris Paul. There's reasons I make that argument for Chris Paul. And Steph Curry is having a hell of a year. But it's because I can see it. It's things that you see and witness are what you can tell. And that's the problem, is I haven't seen him play.
Well, George Karl is one coach that's had 1,000 wins in his career.
Zero NBA championships, I do believe.
Oh, well, anyway, part of building a team that is championship caliber can be moves you make at the trade deadline. So, and we said we promised that we would talk about the
zaniness
that was.
Let's just talk about the big ones. So, okay. KG going back to Minnesota is just a big deal because it's KG going home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a big deal. Yeah. Kevin Garnett got traded for Thaddeus Young. So he'll be back in with the T-Wolves on.
Yeah.
I guess the biggest one was the mess that happened with the Suns and what they did. They got rid of Dragic, which was smart.
Well, David Blatt's won a lot of games now, right?
For Danny Granger and Salmons.
I'm just trying to grind your gears a little bit.
And a couple first-round picks in a big three-team trade that happened.
Yeah, New Orleans was also involved.
And they got Norris Cole and Sean Williams.
Sean Williams, Justin Hamilton.
So that's cool. And then the other big one involving Phoenix, Brandon Knight and Kendall Marshall go to Phoenix. And Kendall Marshall was there like 2 years ago, I do believe, and he did all right there. And then the Philadelphia in return, or I guess the Bucks get MCW out of, or Michael Carter Williams out of from the 76ers, Miles Plumlee from the Suns, and Tyler Ennis from the Suns, and then Philly got some draft picks, which I think that was a bad trade. I really, in a sense, because I
for think, who for everybody?
No, just Plumlee. If I was the Suns, and I guess that's actually not the big one. The big one was Suns got rid of Isaiah Thomas. Horrible idea. Yeah, horrible idea. Because they
going to the Celtics.
I mean,
how about this?
Thunder or Detroit getting Reggie Jackson's good. Cantor, Novak, and DJ Augustine and Kyle Singler going to OKC is not terrible. The part about this, though, that I don't understand is they got rid of the Thunder got rid of Kendrick Perkins
to the Jazz,
which is, I don't know. Yep.
Oh,
because he got cut or something like that.
And now he's signed with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah. And then Aflalo.
Yeah, they bought
from the Nuggets to Portland for Thomas Robinson, Will Barton, and Victor Claver. That's a pretty big one. The Rockets got Pablo Prigioni for Shved, which isn't bad, and 2 second-round picks. Mm-hmm. We're getting to that, yeah.
Yep.
And that's a...
The Rockets got
McDaniels. That one's not a bad trade because KJ McDaniels is pretty good. And Cannon, I have not heard his name before.
Isaiah Cannon?
Yeah, I've never heard of him, which is not usually a good sign.
Yeah.
The Kings and Wizards swapped Andre Miller and Ramon Sessions, which we'll see how that turns out. It's not that big of a deal, but it's like just trading sixth men. So. Yeah. In Sessions, I think it's pretty.
Well, yeah, Andre Miller's 37.
He's getting
right
up there. I mean, but Andre Miller's a defender, and that's
and Ramon
what
Sessions
get
is 29.
To play defense. So that all happened, moved and shaked the NBA around. So it happens. So and the Pelicans get Ish Smith, which isn't a big deal, and JaVale McGee goes to the Sixers.
So the biggest movers here were
the Suns and Sixers.
Yeah, and the Nuggets too.
The Thunder, I guess. I mean, it was a
mess. I would say the Nuggets and the Suns moved the most players and picks and everything.
But the thing is, it's not about who moves the most important. And
right.
That's the Sixers. You have to be in that conversation because Michael Carter Williams was good.
Mm-hmm. So what's your overall reaction to or
becoming
the Suns just screwed up? Horrible idea. They got rid of two of their three best players and didn't get much in return. Brandon Knight's good though. I will give that Brandon Knight's pretty good. But giving up, the thing is they were going to lose Dragic anyway, but I don't know if I want to give up Isaiah Thomas, who's a potential sixth man of the year. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Like, none of these are, like, groundbreaking. Aflalo to Portland's pretty big.
Yeah.
Dragic to Miami's big. But, I don't know. Because, like, rumor has it he might not re-sign with Miami. Mm. And he wants to go to a big market. Like, he's looking at, like, New York, L.A., and a couple other places. Like, he wants big time.
Yeah, that was part of the reason. Well, he can... be paired with Melo then. Your favorite.
Well, no. The thing is, he wants to win.
Oh, okay.
But his thing is he wants to go to a big market because he thinks he's good enough to be there, which I agree with because he's a stud.
All right.
So. Well, it's not as important as it used to be. Like, San Antonio's a small market.
How important
and
is it to be in a big market these days?
Better part of 20 years. Probably like. Yeah, it's been impressive. by no means am I going to say that once the Spurs are super. What I
15 years?
Because like the thing is, my dad, like they've been dominant, but it's not like what I would call a dynasty level dominant. Well, they won five, but the thing is that the Lakers and Celtics were dominant for the better, well, especially the Lakers for the better part of 30 years were insane. Like they were good for years. And it's like the way I look at it is until like you can, that's like dynasty status right there. Like, but I don't know. The Spurs are good. It's just that but like small markets shine. Washington's good right now. Portland's good. There's a lot of small markets. The Jazz are up and coming. The Bucks are in playoff contention. So like it's not about, it's for a lot of players, it's not about where you go. It's about what you do when you're there.
All right.
But I don't know. It was crazy week. The NBA has been wild and crazy. So.
Insanity.
Yep. It's been insanity.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all we got for the NBA. Really. We'll save the MVP predictions for next week. we're all gonna come up with a top three on who we think's gonna win the MVP.
Well, there's your tease of the week.
tease of the week.
Okay.
As far as the NFL goes, the pro days and free agency will be starting up soon. Spring practices are starting up in college football, and then college basketball. Sweet 16 days until March Madness Selection Sunday. Download and subscribe, por favor. We appreciate your feedback. You want to beg again?
Feedback! like feedback. Please.
Yes, we're asking nicely. I mean, we want to talk to you. We don't want to just talk at you, like we said.
Yeah, like I like talking with people.
Definitely.
At people. Like,
I definitely prefer.
I mean, I could give up here and give a standing monologue on every single topic up here, but that's no fun.
Yep.
It's a conversation, but it's not just a conversation between us. We got to get everybody involved in the conversation. We're a conversational podcast.
Well, we care about you here at the Championship Sportscast as our listeners. We ask you to download and subscribe. We are available on iTunes. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, it's at ChampionSports5 for the show itself. And we're also on Facebook at the name Championship Sportscast. My Twitter is at Kempson Cross. And at the Danger Zone MT is to my left here, JT.
Danger Zone.
Brandon, are you going to plug yours? And that is where?
At Lee Brandon.
Well, that's where we are. We are on Twitter at this point. ChampionSportsCast@gmail.com is the show email. And, yeah, this has been the Championship Sportscast for the last week of February, moving into March, starting on Sunday. And yeah, we're glad to have you again. Once again, this has been the Championship Sportscast. Y'all come back.